Welcome to Soils at Work, the biology of soil health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Henner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean, Waste Connections, The Forks, Cities of Brandon, Portage-la Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward 2, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Compost Council of Canada and our compost facilities are excited to offer this learning through workshops as well as webinars and online education, providing classrooms at your own convenience and at your own pace, such as this audio learning program. This is Chapter 6 of our 8-chapter series. So let's begin. Chapter 6, The Ecology of Soil Health. Section 1, What Soil Ecosystems Need from Us. To this point, we've been talking about the processes going on in the soil without much consideration of how the above-ground world influences those processes. In this chapter, we will pull back a bit and take a higher view. To begin this discussion, we will look at the science of ecology and see what it can bring to the big picture. Ecology is the branch of the biological sciences that focuses on the relationships of organisms to one another and to their physical surroundings. Ecology is important because it tends to take a broader, more comprehensive view than other branches of biology. Ecology looks at whole systems rather than at the individual components of systems. We've all heard the expression that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Well, in nature, that is almost always true. When we look at a system as a whole, we often find that it produces greater results than we would have been able to predict by simply studying each of the component pieces individually. When we take an ecological view of soil health, we look at soil ecosystems and ask, what do these entire ecosystems need in practical terms to be healthy? Of course, they will require the basic necessities of life, such as air and water. But the real important question is, what do they need from us from a management perspective? In other words, what can we do as humans to ensure that these below-ground ecosystems have what they need to be healthy? What we have found to date, in very general terms, is that healthy soil ecosystems require three basic things from us. Number one, a regular supply of food and energy. Number two, a stable home to live in. And number three, a varied environment. Another way to look at this is that these three requirements constitute the foundations of soil health. Let's look at each one in more detail. The first requirement, a regular supply of food and energy. All living things require food. Organisms use the energy obtained from food to both maintain their own metabolisms and to organize their environment. Every creature plays its part, not only by simple living, but also by organizing and maintaining a community. We all do it, every day of our lives. In our human communities, we call it making a living. We need energy from food in order to be able to make a living. And making a living usually results in us bringing in at least as much energy, in human terms, think dollars, as we expend to earn it. That energy buys more food, but also shelter, transportation, services of various kinds, medical, communications, entertainment, etc. In addition, some percentage of our energy always goes to the common effort to sustain our community via taxes or direct community service. The world below ground is no different. The organisms that make up that community need energy for basic metabolism. But as we've heard in previous chapters, they use that energy to do things beyond searching for their next meal. Like us, they expend their energy in order to create shelter for themselves, extract resources from the physical environment, recycle their wastes, travel, communicate, grow more food for themselves and their offspring, and contribute to a number of common efforts to sustain their community. One big difference between the world above ground and the one below is where the food, and thus energy, comes from. Almost all the energy that organisms on our planet consume and utilize comes from the sun, either directly or indirectly. The creatures above ground derive their energy directly either from photosynthesis, as in the case of plants, or by consuming the products of photosynthesis as food, in the case of animals. On the other hand, the below-ground community, the living world of soil, is completely dependent on energy delivered from the world above in the form of these basic types of foods. Organic residues. These are either dead organisms or the wastes of living organisms. Voluntary contributions in the form of secretions by plant roots. These are the plant root exudates we talked about in earlier chapters. Non-voluntary contributions by above-ground organisms, as in the case of root parasites and soil pathogens. Like any community of organisms, the health and prosperity of this world below ground depends on the availability of reasonably priced energy, that is, energy available at a cost lower than that which the organisms have to expend to obtain it, so that there is energy left over for other needs, such as shelter, transportation, waste management. You get it? This is the concept of energy return on energy invested, that is, the efficiency of the process by which energy is obtained by the community. If the return is good and all other factors are adequate, the community prospers. If it is poor, the community struggles and can even die out. Of course, other factors enter into the issue of community health, such as the consistent availability of water. Deserts, for example, get very little. Frequency of catastrophic events such as fires, flooding, mudslides, and the temperature regime, for example, tropical, temperate, Arctic. However, the availability to soil organisms to regularly receive a good share of energy from the sun is crucial in all environments and can greatly influence the ability of both above and below ground communities to thrive in otherwise difficult environments. Humans have a lot to say about how efficiently energy is captured and transferred to the soil community in agricultural settings. The potential is huge, but unfortunately not always well realized in modern farming, and this is a big factor in soil health. The energy route most well understood by most people is by means of organic residues, such as waste from living plants and animals as well as their dead bodies. However, as we have discussed in previous chapters, plants also exude freshly photosynthesized substances into the soil through their roots, plant root exudates. These non-residual contributions are extremely important to the community below ground. A healthy plant may contribute almost half of its photosynthesized organic product to the soil. This is a high energy cost to the plant and indicates quite clearly at an individual level how much plants value the activities of the world below. The second requirement, a stable home. Every community, above or below the ground, requires a suitable home or habitat. Just as we need access to water, food, air, natural resources, shelter, so do the creatures beneath our feet. And just as we spend a lot of our energy creating better habitats for ourselves, so do they. Soil habitats need to be structured in such a way that the organisms that live there are able to easily access the food, water, air, and natural resources that they need to live, procreate, and build and maintain their community. These organisms also need the soil habitat to provide shelter from extreme conditions, protection from predators, access to transportation routes, and storage capacity for water and nutrients. Pore space is fundamental to all of this. As discussed in Chapter 2, the amount and quality of pore space is the result of good soil aggregation. Good aggregation opens up the soil and allows air and water to infiltrate and be stored in the resulting spaces between the aggregates. We also saw in Chapter 2 that many different soil organisms play a crucial role in aggregate formation and therefore the creation and maintenance of pore space. In effect, they build their own underground equivalent to our cities, complete with housing, storage capacity for water and nutrients, transportation routes, and communications infrastructure. As above-ground land managers, it will serve farmers well to take into account how their actions might support or damage the structure engineered by soil organisms. More on that later in this chapter. The third requirement, a diverse environment. What do we mean by diversity? We mean a wide variety of above-ground plant life. In other words, the opposite of monoculture, which is one crop only, rotated with a bare field. A diverse set of above-ground plants results in a diversity of inputs to the life below ground. Secondly, a wide variety of above-ground animal life, such as insects and mammals, is important as well. A diverse variety of above-ground animals, such as insects and birds, etc., results in a more well-balanced ecosystem and greater total productivity, which in turn provides more food for the creatures of the soil. And lastly, there should be great variety among the types of organisms in the soil itself. This last point is very important as it ensures the capacity of the soil to adapt to changing conditions, a characteristic that scientists refer to as resilience. Diversity in all of these forms is an area where modern agriculture has often been lacking, given the propensity for simplified rotations, few if any cover crops, little habitat for wildlife. This weakness has led to a lack of resilience and ability to adapt to extreme weather and other environmental stresses. Section 2. Soil health and ecological succession. What is ecological succession? The term ecological succession refers to the tendency for ecosystems of all kinds to change predictably over time. They tend to change from simple to more complex, from low diversity to high diversity, and from low biomass production to high. In nature, ecosystems always change, inexorably and predictably, as if they have a plan, and in fact, you could say that they do. Scientists have painstakingly documented nature's succession plans over the past century. These consist of an orderly succession of different types of plant life over time, which gradually change both the physical environment and the biological composition of the community. This process continues until an equilibrium or climax state is reached. Once that climax state is in place, changes in the plant community composition become slower, more cyclical, and balanced, as we can see in an old growth forest or a mature prairie. Of course, things eventually happen to upset this balance, such as major fires, floods, changes in climate, disease outbreaks, and especially human activity. These occurrences typically push the ecosystem back to an earlier successional state. When this occurs, natural succession again kicks in, working diligently to reclaim the lost balance. The term primary succession is used to refer to the entire process, from bare rock to mature forest. Early successional plants tend to be fast-growing, short-lived, herbaceous species. They are able to take advantage of the conditions of low competition and high nutrient availability by growing quickly and covering the soil. As they live and die, however, they increase soil organic matter, altering the soil food web and creating conditions better suited for their successors. Over time, these pioneer species are replaced by slower-growing but more efficient plants that can thrive in conditions where competition is greater and nutrients harder to come by. Early successional herbaceous plants are gradually replaced by annual grasses, which are typical mid-successional species. Perennial grasses come later and are themselves followed by woody shrubs. Similarly, as longer-lived trees take over, the fast-growing trees, the sun-loving poplars and birch, arrive first, to be eventually replaced by shade-tolerant, slower-growing trees, such as oaks and maples. The point at which the succession stops, the climax state, depends on the region's long-term environment, with precipitation levels being a major factor, as in prairies versus forests, with the latter requiring more annual rainfall. The term secondary succession is used to refer to those situations where the successional process is knocked back along the successional path by a catastrophic event or series of events and has to start again at an earlier stage. It's a force to be reckoned with in agricultural fields, particularly when the fields are left bare, both between rows of field crops and between crops. The combination of high nutrient levels from fertilization and bare soil, no competition, is ideal for early successional plants, many of which are the annuals or biennials we know as weeds. What do the principles of ecological succession mean for agriculture? First of all, modern agriculture usually tries to stop natural succession in its tracks, to hold it steady, so to speak. This would be easier if a monoculture field represented a natural climax state, but it definitely does not. These attempts to thwart nature take a lot of energy. Weeds are simply nature's way of trying to kickstart the succession process to get it back on track. A weed is able to make quick use of easily available nutrients, usually the case after a major disturbance, in order to grow rapidly. At the same time, weeds increase soil carbon with their exudates and residues. In addition, succession also happens below ground. Early successional soils are different in terms of types of organisms that dominate. What this means is that a healthy soil looks different at different stages of succession, and these differences can affect what happens above ground and what a farmer has to do to get good and efficient productivity. As the food web above ground evolves from early successional plants to later successional grasses or trees, the soil food web also changes. The proportion of various types of organisms changes. One particular change is particularly relevant: the relative biomass, weight, of bacteria versus fungi. In early successional systems, bacteria dominate. In mid-successional systems, bacteria and fungi are relatively equal in total biomass. Finally, in later successional situations, fungi dominate. This is important for a variety of reasons. For one thing, it demonstrates clearly that healthy soils can have different types of soil food webs. They're not always the same. Secondly, there are some other changes that come as soils move through succession, and these can be quite significant. As soils become more fungal, they also become more productive and sequester more carbon. Increased organic matter and the number and quality of soil aggregates are both highly correlated with increased fungal dominance. Even though a bacterial-dominated soil can still be considered a healthy soil, given the successional state above ground, it may not be the most productive soil for farming. Summary: the term healthy soils really means healthy soil ecosystems. Healthy soil ecosystems need good, efficient access to food and energy if they are to thrive. Secondly, they need a home that's protected from constant disruption so that they can maintain the complex infrastructures that they are always building below ground. Thirdly, they need lots of variety in both the above ground and below ground environments so that they can develop and maintain resilience in the face of environmental change and occasional high impact events. Also, soil ecosystems always change, and they do so in a directional and predictable way, known as ecological succession. This means that ecosystems can be healthy in different ways depending on the stage of succession. This is an important and under-recognized aspect of soil health in agriculture. Finally, there is a growing body of science that is indicating that the role of beneficial fungi in farm soils is very important for a variety of reasons. Even though much of this science is relatively new and not yet well established, there is certainly good reason to suggest that building larger, more stable populations of soil fungi may be one of the keys to sustainable productivity in agriculture. And so this ends Chapter 6. Thanks very much for listening. This chapter, along with seven others, is part of Soils at Work, the Biology of Soil Health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Penner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean, Waste Connections, The Forks, Cities of Brandon, Portage-La Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward 2, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Council invites you to take the self-managed quiz found at www.compost.org to help test your understanding of the information provided and become a soil builder. Remember to follow these important steps to be a soil builder. Cover the soil, keep roots in the ground, add compost and optimize other inputs, support plant and soil diversity, minimize soil disturbance. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest.